Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Ballot question two, the proposal to lift the cap on charter schools, is the single most expensively fought ballot question in Massachusetts history. Both sides have raised $33 million so far. That's $3 million more than what was spent on all ballot questions combined in 2014. Well, over the past several weeks, we've been reaching out and requesting interviews with the largest donors on both sides. Proponents of lifting the charter school cap have raised some $21 million so far, and 75% of that is from five nonprofits. By far the largest is New York-based Families for Excellence Schools, which does not have to disclose its donors. They have declined our interview requests, as did several other large individual donors. However, we did hear from one, entrepreneur Chuck Longfield. He donated $100,000 to the Yes on Two side, and we spoke with him on Monday. As for the No side, 99% of the $12 million they've raised so far has come from teachers' unions. The Massachusetts Teachers Association, the American Federation of Teachers, and the National Education Association are the largest. We were hoping to speak with MTA President Barbara Mattaloni, but she was unable to join us this week. However, we did speak with her back in April as the Question 2 debate was getting underway, and you can hear that conversation at radioboston.org. This afternoon, though, we did sit down with the president of the American Federation of Teachers in Massachusetts, Tom Gosnell. He's a longtime member of the Boston Teachers Union, and he got his start teaching Latin, the language, in 1964. And I began our conversation by asking him how Boston public schools have changed since then.
The demographics have changed in the city of Boston. There are considerably more minorities in the public schools than there were back in the mid-60s. In addition, the number of students in the schools, you know, has declined since the mid-60s. I would say those are some of the really big changes.
Mm. There is also pretty high demand in Boston for students who are on waiting lists for charter schools. I want to talk with you in more detail in a little bit in terms of the union's opposition to charter schools, but let me just ask you personally, what does it tell you, what does it mean to you that there are so many families on waiting lists, even right here in Boston, for a charter school placement?
Well, first of all, we have to be clear on the waiting list. The state auditor has issued a report, and she says that the 32,000 individuals that are on waiting lists statewide, not just in Boston, is a bogus number. And even now, we cannot find out exactly how many people are on the waiting list.
Well, I believe if I remember correctly, the auditor's report, Suzanne Bump's report, said that the number may be in the more of the 20,000 area. But again, no one could be sure. But it's not an insignificant number. I don't think that there's any debate about that. And I guess what I'm asking you is, the fact that there are any children, any families on waiting lists for charter schools, does that not by definition mean that the Boston public schools are not serving the needs of those families as much as they could or should be?
Well, again, I don't need to repeat what I just said about waiting lists in the Boston public schools. But I think parents who are interested in the education of their children, and I would say all parents are interested in their children's education, they may be applying just for a number of options, whatever those options may be. I strongly suspect that there are students who are on the waiting list who applied for the charter schools who made the choice to go into the public schools but are still on the waiting list of the charter schools.
Mm. Mm. But again, we can't know that.
We don't know that for sure.
Now, one of the reasons why we're speaking with you today is that on the show, we have been reaching out over the past many weeks and months to the groups that are amongst the biggest donors on either side of the Question 2 debate. And it's actually not a very large group of people because, I mean, that's one of the very compelling stories in terms of what's happening in Massachusetts over Question 2. On the Yes on Two side, it's a small group of donors and not-for-profits, some of whom do not have to disclose who their donors are. They're putting in the vast majority of the money for the Yes on Two campaign, pushing or more than $20 million so far. On the No on Two side, more than 99% of the money for the No on Two campaign has come from teachers' unions. the Massachusetts Teachers Association, more than $7.5 million. The American Federation of Teachers, National AFT, $1.2 million. The NEA, $5.4 million. AFT Massachusetts, according to the latest filings we've seen, has donated more than $568,000 to the No on Two campaign. Now, I raise those numbers as context. Why is it that almost 100% of the support for the No on Two campaign is coming just from teachers' unions, and we're not seeing a big flood of money from, you know, parents, families, other groups? It just seems entirely coming from teachers' unions.
I would point out that there are many, many individual contributors to the No on Two campaign. Certainly, the volume in amount is not equal to that of what the teachers' union is contributing, are contributing. But there are many, many individual contributors. Now, the teachers' unions, of course, believe that this is a vital public education issue. I would point out that for American Federation of Teachers Massachusetts, at our convention last year, the members voted a significant dues increase in order to fund the campaign against Question 2. So we believe that it is our members who are actually funding our portion of the campaign against Question 2, and that this was done through a democratic process.
Are there other places in which this money could have been better spent? I mean, on programs that would support the very teachers who are members of these unions in their schools?
Question 2 really threatens the existence of the public school system in Massachusetts, and that's why we're so heavily involved in that. But that is certainly not our only involvement.
Mr. Gosnell, I'm curious, why does this have to be a zero-sum game? Because I feel like either side, the leaders on Yes on Two and No on Two, they speak about this question or the issue of charter schools in terms of it's all or nothing. I mean, you just now, Barbara Mataloni of the MTA on our show earlier this year said that she absolutely opposes any increase in charter schools. There just seems to be a rigidity on both sides that makes any kind of compromise impossible. Why does it have to be that way?
Well, let me point out a little history here. Charter schools were created in the legislation in 1993. In 2010, there was a significant expansion by the legislature in the number of charter schools. It's very important to understand that it has already happened. This one, if it happens, will have a very serious impact on the district schools. I mean, the district schools are already losing substantial amount of money, and a state commission has already issued a report that the district schools are $1 billion underfunded. Should this pass, this would create 12 new charter schools per year for eternity, and the financial impact on the district schools would be massive.
The question of the financial impact is at the heart of the debate over Question 2. You know, we obviously can't come to any particular conclusion here about it. But I want to return to this question about the teachers' union's opposition to Question 2, because on Monday, we spoke with Boston entrepreneur Chuck Longfield. He donated $100,000 to the Yes on 2 campaign. And he also says that he's donated some $1 million to Boston Public Schools over the past 30 years to support technology, teacher training, that kind of thing. And when I talked to him, I asked him about what he thinks was keeping the Boston Public Schools from making some of the changes that he believes are going on in successful charter schools, such as longer school days, more professional development for teachers. And here's what he said.
At the end of the day, everything is sort of collectively bargained in the public schools. And I would say in general, the central administrations aren't always strong enough, you know, to be the other side of the collective bargaining agreements. And so I think it just is hard sometimes.
So put another way, you're saying unions are...
Well, you know, I think that there's a lot of impediments to get in the way. But like I said, I spend a lot of time and money in the Boston Public Schools. I'm big fans and I want them to work. But It's going to take time for that. Change comes slowly. But until that happens in Boston, generations of kids are going to those 70 level 3 and level 4 schools.
So Tom Gosnell, Chuck Longfield was being cautious there when I pushed him on it, but I think it's pretty obvious what he was trying to say, that he believes unions are an impediment to progress and innovation in the Boston public schools.
Okay, let me...
In fact, so do many people who are in support of Question 2 also believe this.
Yeah. Massachusetts public school students are number one in the USA. They are number one in the Western world. Every single teacher in the state of Massachusetts works under a collective bargaining agreement.
Those who don't work in charter schools.
Correct. Yes, that's what I'm talking about, the district schools. Alabama and Mississippi, and I have nothing against the teachers or the kids there, but they're at the very bottom. They have zero collective bargaining agreements.
But what about even the struggle to make incremental changes? I mean, Chuck Longfield was talking to us about many charter schools have longer school days, and it took quite a fight in Boston to get longer school days. I mean, it was at the end of 2014 that Boston Public Schools and the teachers union finally reached an agreement to extend the school day by 40 minutes at the cost of some $12.5 million to the city. And that's just one example. An agreement was finally reached, but people look at it and say, it takes so much work. There's such a profound fight even for this one thing, which, many people in the education world see as a no-brainer, that we got to extend the school day a little bit.
Public education takes a lot of work. Let me just say that right off the bat. But I would point out that not only within the Boston public schools, but throughout the entire state, there are a huge number of programs that, in effect, extend the school day for both the students and the teachers. One has to be very careful about saying that, school ends at 2:30 or 3 o'clock. That's the end of the day for the kids. That is absolutely not true. Now, I actually believe the kids are being cheated because I do not believe that we are doing enough for the education of these kids in Boston, in Lawrence, and Lowell, and Springfield.
Because there is an achievement gap. I mean, Massachusetts, on average, as you're correctly pointing out, does very, very well, but there's an achievement gap within the state.
I call it an opportunity gap. And this is what I think the opportunity gap is. It's more than coincidence that the level 5 schools and districts in this state are in places where there is a high level of poverty. And I believe the kids in those situations are being cheated.
So Yes on Two supporters would say that those are exactly the districts where charter schools are needed the most, so that students have some kind of opportunity beyond what's available to them in the district to overcome the hurdles put in their way due to things like poverty.
I completely disagree with that. I think those are the arguments for a greater investment of resources into those school districts. And what happens is, dealing with a very small number of students, the charter schools take resources away from the district schools. And quite frankly, government has yet to meet its obligation to these students.
Do you think that the union that you represent, and also the MTA, the NEA, the BTU, that all these unions ought to, no matter what happens with Question 2, ought to be putting additional pressure on the state legislature to update, the foundation budget formula, to update the reimbursement formulas, to do what you're calling for, which is the state needs to do its part?
This happens every year. And personally, I am committed to making sure that it happens next year and the following year.
Question 2 is the most expensively fought ballot question in Massachusetts history. A lot of that money is coming from out of state. But it's not just in terms of the dollars. I feel like this question is more passionately felt by people than almost any other ballot question I have encountered in recent memory. It's dividing friends and neighbors. It's dividing people in the same school district. What does it mean to you that there is so much intense interest and passion and disagreement about Question 2?
Well, I think one of the reasons there is so much passion, and probably the overwhelming reason, is the fact that people do realize how important education is. Number one, economically it's important, and which to me is just as important in a democracy. A well-educated population is very, very important. But teachers and parents now know from experience that the district schools are being terribly underfunded, that they need a lot more resources. That's the experience of these people, and that's very, very important.
Well, Tom Gosnell is president of the American Federation of Teachers of Massachusetts. Thank you so very much for joining us.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
The view there from the teachers' unions. As a reminder, on Monday, we talked to Boston entrepreneur Chuck Longfield about his $100,000 donation in support of Question 2. You can listen to that conversation at radioboston.org. And as always, let us know what you think. You can do that at our website or on Twitter. We're at Radio Boston. That's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.